This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And I think before we go any further this week, with 1,656 regular season games done and dusted before the 12 best of the rest head into the playoffs, a big thank you to everybody who's made football possible across the EFL's three divisions over the past 8 months. Every club official, every member of staff, every manager, every player, every supporter who left their season ticket money with their team, many of them without seeing a ball kicked. Despite a crippling global pandemic, 72 teams, many of them navigating their way around major COVID outbreaks themselves and with hugely reduced income, still managed to play over 150,000 minutes of football. It's a brilliant achievement. The Football League kept going, just like it has done since 1888. Well done to all. We'll mop up all the outstanding issues from the regular season and look ahead to the playoffs on this week's episode of the official EFL podcast. So what do we know? Well, in the Sky Bet Championship, that Fulham and West Brom have joined Sheffield United back in the division from next season after their relegation from the Premier League was confirmed. In the playoffs, it's going to be Bournemouth against Brentford and Barnsley against Swansea City. More on those games to come. And we now know the identity of the three teams who finished in the relegation places, but only after a dramatic final round of fixtures. Despite their end of season heroics, Wickham Wanderers were virtually down before they won at Middlesbrough. As for the other two places, it was Derby County who survived by the skin of their teeth at the expense of Sheffield Wednesday and Rotherham, but only after the team in the position of safety changed five times, with Rotherham United finally surrendering the lead to draw at Cardiff City just seconds before Derby County drew level themselves in their thrilling 3-3 draw with Sheffield Wednesday to stay up by a single point. We can talk to regular official EFL podcast pundit Curtis Davis, who threw himself into the fray for Derby despite having been out since December and having been written off for the season with a ruptured Achilles tendon. You threw a bit of a surprise for us there, Curtis.
It was a little hidden secret. It was just something that I always had in the back of my head. I was hoping I wouldn't be needed, to be honest. Looking at the fixtures towards the back end of the season, you're hoping that we can pick up a win there, pick up a win there. And it ended up that we lost six in a row. So we got to the last day of the season. We needed something from the game. And I just felt that I felt good in my body in terms of running and twisting and turning. And I could head a ball. So I felt I could offer myself to the manager, either end of the pitch. So if I were needed for 10, 15 minutes, I'd give it a go. And he liked the idea and it ended up coming to fruition.
Well, I tell you what, before we talk about you on the pitch, I mean, how was it to sit through the agonies and how were you all getting information about what was going on? Because I think Rotherham were in a position of safety and then it turned around to you were, then back to Rotherham. And then as Rotherham conceded, Martin Waghorn was still waiting to take the penalty. So for about 20 seconds, Sheffield Wednesday were safe before Martin stuck the penalty away and you were safe. I mean, from a neutral perspective, mate, wow. But if you to be involved with it, what was it like to be in and around it?
Yeah, it was just emotionally draining. I sit there and I watch the games anyway. That's tough enough. But actually being on the bench almost made an extra edge to it because I knew at some point I could be involved in this. So I'm sitting there on the bench and I'm, you know, the reason we find out is because obviously it's an empty stadium, it's quiet, and you can hear Dance from TalkSport shouting loudly, Rotherham have scored, it's 1-0 and Rotherham at the moment will be staying up. So you hear it, the players on the pitch can clearly hear it. So there's no way of going, oh, don't say anything to the lads on the pitch. They've heard it. So it's a really surreal thing that you're just looking around and you're looking at the lads like, you've obviously heard that, haven't you? You've heard that. So obviously we're hoping that we hear another update of Cardiff scoring. Haven't heard that, haven't heard that. Playing well in the first half. Martin bashes himself into the post, nearly scores. Have another goal disallowed. And then just before halftime, we concede. And, you know, all of a sudden you're thinking, here we go. But fortunately, at halftime we went in, it was actually quite calm. The manager was really calm and quite happy with what we were producing. And from that, we managed to score two goals in 5 minutes ourselves. And, you know, it's the other way around now that we're in control. And then on 65 minutes, I was always going to go warm up then, and didn't know where I was going to be coming on. Was I going to be coming on at front or at the back? I didn't know. But yeah, I went for a warm up 65 minutes, and obviously through that time, there were another few goals. And yeah, it was just, I just couldn't make anything of it. It was just running up and down that touchline was just mayhem, not knowing what I'm going to do when I come on. But once I was on the pitch and I came on, particularly in my position, it was easy. That was bliss, because I was in control of what I could do then, and I could expel that nervous energy onto the pitch. Whereas when you sat there on the side, you can't do anything. And that's why it went like that on the pitch. 10, 15 minutes, like when it, within a click of the fingers, it was done. Whereas usually if I were, you know, usually expect that to take longer. You know, you're looking at the clock. For me, it was just concentrating on my position, organising people around me. If I had to win a header, I'd go and win it. If not, the best part for me was just not having to do anything. And that meant I was doing okay. And fortunately, yeah, we held out until the end. And at the end, you know, I spoke about a lot of young players, you know, we've got in the squad, go running on the pitch, and it's like a big celebration. And for me, you don't celebrate staying up on the last day, particularly in the Championship. You know, if we had gone up to the Premier League and you have all the problems of finances and stuff, when totally understand in the Premier League, yes, but for Derby County staying in the Championship, for me, it wasn't something to celebrate. So I kind of went round, shook the Sheffield Wednesday players' hands and consoled them, because it was on a knife's edge. It could have been either one of us. So consoled them, and then I started to get a bit emotional, because the realisation of, you know, one, my mind that I had to put myself through to get myself mentally ready for the challenge of putting myself forward. But two, it might be my last game for Derby. So as I walked down the tunnel, for everything that's going on, everyone going mad, jumping around, all excited, I shed a little tear to myself and just got a bit emotional.
Would you mind if I ask you how Wayne summed things up or left it with you all on the kind of final whistle and things? I mean, what was said?
Yeah, he said exactly what the game was, summed up the season. It summed up our season, that we'd be playing well, we'd go down, and then we'd get ourselves back into a great position, concede a sloppy goal, then we look like we're going to lose, then we rally again, and we get something back. And that, he just said it summed up the season. And I think it probably was, you know, for all the good things that we've done this season, we've undone them with poor moments. And obviously, clearly, from the position we were in, too many poor moments through the season. I think, you know, a lot of us players will be looking at ourselves and trying to improve and trying to help the team, obviously, more next year. We know, obviously, the squad had a few issues and we had a lot of young players to come in this year. But hopefully next year, with crowds back, finances should be rejuvenated again. And we can add some, obviously, squad players in terms of numbers, but obviously add that extra bit of quality as well, because, you know, Wayne was in for a lot of criticism towards the end of the season, and people were saying, is he right for the job? I think he's right for the job, and I think this season will be the when we learn that, and when it's his players, his signings, and he's had a full season at it, a full pre-season as well, then you can judge him, and that's when it's his baby then, and he'll be accountable for everything that happens from now on.
I'm sure you'll answer these questions with great humility. We do need to reflect on the three teams that did go down. I mean, you mentioned Sheffield Wednesday. Depon Chansiri, their owner, has said, I take full responsibility. We must face the reality of what lies ahead. I'm sure that was a very difficult situation, because you're marrying your jubilation with their uber sadness on the pitch. Did you have any quiet conversations with any of them afterwards? Was it a pretty desolate situation from their point of view?
Yeah, in terms of the ones I know well, Moses Odebejo's injured and Barry Bannon, I didn't get to see him after the game, but I think there's not much you can say to someone. I just tried to give him a pat on the head, give him a half hug kind of thing, and and console them. It's not much you can say to someone when they're that disappointed. But I'm hoping that Mauro stays, obviously a former teammate of mine and great guy and a great coach. And I believe he can bring him back up so long as he's got the right backing. The fans are on side, and I think it will be a good job for him to then build him up again.
Yeah, third time they've been in the third tier since they were relegated from the Premier League in 2000. At the other end of the scale, Rotherham, Paul Warne described their final match as a microcosm of their season. He also said, "I'm broken at the moment. I cannot see any sunshine, but when I wake up tomorrow, I will look back and reflect." I mean, they've done heckishly well with the resources they've got, but 3 wins in the last 20 matches, I guess that kind of says it all, doesn't it?
It does. It's a really difficult one, you know. Obviously, all season or all back in the season, I've been rooting for them to lose. But I really like Paul Warne. I really like him. I like his honesty. I like how when he comes out after a game, win, lose, draw, he's just always clear and precise on what he wanted from his team, whether he was lucky, whether he was unlucky. He just gives you it straight. And that's what I really liked about him. I think the most frustrating thing for Rotherham, as we said, their budget, their man Wickham, their budgets are obviously going to be very low in the Championship. But the most disappointing thing is it was in their hands a lot of times through this season. And in the game the weekend, I haven't watched it back because I'm kind of wiping last season away. But I believe they had lots of chances to win the game. And that will disappoint him. And then you think back to, I think it was the Barnsley game. They had lots of chances that game to win the game. And also they had a controversial goal scored against them. So if you're a Rotherham fan sitting at home, you probably have that bitterness of, we missed all these chances, we had a dodgy goal against us. And those little sliding doors moments where that gives you an extra 3 points through the season, they could have been safe. And this isn't me trying to, like, ultimately it is what it is. We are in this position, but I think when you go through all those games that they did and they still put on the fight that they put on, you have to give him a lot of credit. And like I said, I think he's a good guy and he'll be well equipped to bring him back.
Being brutally honest, if the season had gone on another 3-6 games, bearing in mind the form that you guys were in and bearing in mind the form that Wickham were in, 6 wins in their last 11. I mean, seems to me they've, despite being one of the greatest underdog stories of all time, they'd almost acclimatised, hadn't they? Albeit just a few games too late.
Yeah. I spoke to Gareth Ainsworth recently and he was saying, listen, he said all along, we're up against it, but my lads still believe. And that, he said that my lads still believe. And he goes, we might not have the best quality in the Championship, but I'm telling you, we've got the most heart. I've got a bunch of players that want to play for each other, want to play for me and know what they need to do week in, week out when they go on the football pitch. And obviously, evidently, you know, the last couple of months, as you say, if the season had gone on, you would have worried. You totally would have worried. It's just the fact that they had kind of been written off because of the goal difference is the only reason why we kind of were able to sleep on Wickham, I guess, and not be so worried about them on the last day of the season. But for them to have climbed from amazing. The bottom to third from bottom even just at the end of the season was amazing. But as you say, I think sometimes you can, you know, if you analyse the season, could it have been that they were playing with more of a freedom once they were already down? I guess in their head, I'm not saying they were down because they obviously still had the chance to give it a go. But maybe in their head when they thought, well, we've got nothing to lose now, let's just go for it. Maybe it brought a different side out of them. And that will be interesting to see, you know, if Gareth is there next year, if he approaches the next season with that style. Almost, you know, let's just go at games and go right in their faces and try and get the goals from early on. Whereas, you know, with Wickham, they were a bit more solid, played on second balls, played on set pieces, which you understand. But as you say, another week even, let alone another couple of weeks, they could well have stayed up.
Amazing, amazing story. Elsewhere in the Sky Bet Championship, brilliant to see Sol Bamba return for a couple of minutes after his treatment for non-Hodgkin lymphoma. 5 wins in 8 for Preston has earned Frankie McAvoy the job on a permanent basis to succeed Alex Neil. And I know we've talked about him loads, Curtis, but Ivan Toney at Brentford smashed the Championship's goal-scoring record for a season with 31. He's got 10 assists as well. Lovely story too. He was so desperate to break the record, his manager said, you've got to be fit and fresh for the playoffs. You've got 1 hour to do it. And he said, actually, on the pitch, he kept looking up at the clock and thinking, I'd better get my finger out and get this in. Sure enough, he did shortly before the hour. And when he got the hook, and that was it. What an astonishing achievement. 41 goal contribution over the course of a season.
It's amazing. You know, to consider this player was in League One last year. I think people forget that. You know, I know you can sign good goal scorers from League One and then they come up to Championship, score a few, you know. If you got 20 goals, that would have been a great return. But to score 31 goals and 10 assists, you know, 41 goal contributions, just scary. It's more than Derby scored.
Wow.
So that just shows, you know, having a player like that of that quality in your team is massive. And I think it was really getting to his head at one point. I've watched him on a few occasions through doing my punditry and watched him closely, and I think it was getting to him. He had a good chance against Bournemouth to do it. He had a good chance against Rotherham to get a goal, and I knew that the manager was trying to keep him on the pitch as long as possible to allow him to get that goal and then forget about it. But I think the manager had to draw the line somewhere, and I think that's why the weekend, you know, he did turn around and say, you've only got an hour. And I think that might have been the best thing for him, knowing that it's almost like, right, I've got to do it now. Do you know what I mean? It's done and dusted, got it done. And he's able to stay fresh for the playoffs, and I'm really looking forward to that contest between them and Bournemouth.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. So Brentford, unbeaten in 12, won the last four, including at Bournemouth, and they are at Bournemouth in the first leg. Wondered what you thought of Jonathan Woodgate's team selection, because they've traded 7 consecutive wins for 3 consecutive defeats. Obviously, he tinkered with his lineup quite a lot to keep the players fresh. Is that a good or bad idea?
I think you do need to consider freshness, of course. But I think when you've got that momentum, for me personally as an individual player, I want to play. I want to play. And then that way I'm building that momentum. We've won again. We've won again. We've won again. And winning becomes a habit. And now, unfortunately, you know, from having all those wins, they've now got that backward step of we need to snap out of this and it's going to be in a playoff situation. What I will say is, over two legs, it's going to be some fantastic football play between those clubs, Brentford and Bournemouth, and that will be a very tiring couple of games. So maybe Woodgate has got it spot on by resting them just before meeting Brentford. Obviously didn't know who he was going to have, but before meeting Brentford, it will be vital that they've got legs, of course. But yeah, like you say, that mindset of, you know, a confident Tony that's now got his 31 goals and is looking to put you to the sword and finally get back to the Premier League against a side that, you know, as I say, have been doing really well, but taking a step off of it lately, players coming back into the team. It will be interesting. But I think if I had to pick one side to go through, I think I'll still back Bournemouth.
If they reach the final and ultimately do it, I mean, that would tell us a lot about the gulf, wouldn't it, between the Championship and the Premier League, the fact that two of last season's three promoted clubs have come straight back down. And if it was to be Bournemouth who join Norwich and Watford, the three relegated go straight back up. Well, that's a sad situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a bit predictable.
Well, I think you'd always expect the relegated teams, particularly when they've not lost too many players, or all of those teams managed to retain their squad with the riches from the Premier League and the parachute payments. So when you're talking about dropping down from Premier League with a Premier League squad in the Championship, it gives you a massive chance. So if you consider a gulf, I think it's harsh on Brentford, because even though those players, a lot of them haven't played in the Premier League, you look at their squad and, you know, even though names-wise, when I play against them, I'm telling you, it's a really tough, tough ask. And a lot of those players in their own right have done very well this season. The worry I have for Brentford is, it's not a worry because they usually manage to replace them, but if they don't go up, Ivan's gone. Then does a Canos go? Then does an Mbeumo maybe think this is my year to go? There's a lot of players in there that, and especially, you know, they've got a few Danish internationals that will be going to the Euros and things like that, that could potentially be seen and be taken. So it could be an exodus from the side if they don't go up. But, you know, that's just my opinion. I couldn't say I'm 100% on that, but I just feel that Bournemouth's, experiencing, like I say, big games is going to be massive for them.
The question is, I suppose, who they might meet in the final. Barnsley have won 13 of their last 19 matches. Hellish momentum they have got. Swansea have spluttered a bit of late, lost 6 of their last 11. And I think a couple of players out of contract there as well. Certainly Ayew is out of contract at the end of the season. So I guess having missed out this time last year, is it now or never time for them as well?
You'd say now or never. I think I didn't expect them to get there last year. And then even this year with last year's experience, I can't say hand on heart that I thought they were going to do it again. But, you know, they have done it. You know, the manager's been fantastic with them, with his young squad that he's trying to bring through. The likes of Ayew, you know, he's out of contract, yes, but is that hunger there to make sure they get up so he gets another contract? Because, you know, at the moment they won't be able to afford what he's currently on, if what I hear is correct.
If what you hear, is there a little grapevine? Like, do you keep a little book of players and what they're earning and stuff like that? So a little grapevine goes around? Who? What do you mean, what you hear? Well, you don't have to name names, but who tells you what you hear, Curtis?
No, you always hear from people that they're with this agent and that agent, and he's on X amount in the Championship, which is astronomical, basically, for the Championship. But ultimately, you know, if clubs sign a player and he's not got a cut, then that's up to them, you know. But for him, you know, having played this season and watched him this season, the big moments, as we said, the penalties, all them last-minute penalties he had to score. Yeah. I think it was like he scored four penalties in five games
or
something. Yeah, something like that. And you know, when he came on against Reading the other day, the way he turned the game around, you know, he was given a rest because of his hamstring. He came onto the pitch. First thing he did was shout at his centre-half, give me the ball, give me the ball. And then he nutmegged Liam Moore and then started the goal off. And then after that, he scored himself. And that was it. You know, half an hour performance, man of the match. Yeah. And that's what he's got. When I talk about big players, big quality, he's got that. And he's got that big ego where he can carry the team on his shoulders and take everything on himself. But you're coming up against the Barnsley side, as you say, that are in form and they are horrible to play against.
Go on, how? How? From a player's perspective, how are they horrible to play against?
Because they just run all day long. They fight for second balls. They're not bothered about the quality, shall I say, of all of their play. When I say they get the ball forward, not they just hoof it, I'm saying, but they play it up to big Daryl DK. They play off of there, the likes of Chaplin, the likes of Woodrow around him. You've got Mauer who runs the midfield, keeps them ticking over. And I think just teams couldn't work them out or couldn't work out what to do to counteract it. Now, what I would say is over a two-leg playoff, how easy is that going to be to do against a side like Swansea? You know, to play them in a one-off, maybe, you know, if Barnsley got to the final and it was just a straight final, I might fancy Barnsley. But to do it in a two-leg playoff and then to beat someone else in a final, it's going to be a big ask. But if anything, I am still leaning towards Barnsley to get through to the final. I just think if they're able to get up ahead of steam, I think that would be enough to see them through to the final.
First leg of your Sky Bet Championship playoffs Monday, the 17th of May, and the reverse on Saturday, the 22nd of May. And actually, would this be a good moment for us to also mention the great news, Curtis, that the Sky Bet playoff semi-finals and finals will see the return of supporters. We had the government's announcement that the country's moving into step 3 of its COVID-19 roadmap from the 17th of May. And obviously, this will mark another welcome milestone along the road. Announcements on ticketing will be made by individual clubs in due course. Although they have said that there will be no away fans in the semi-finals. And then obviously both sets of supporters will be able to go to the final. Skybet League One. I mean, most stuff had been sorted out before the final weekend. Let me just mark your card with a few of the stories. Doncaster Rovers' James Coppinger played his 695th and final game. We obviously had James with us last week on the official EFL podcast. Northampton Town, despite their relegation, 5 wins and 19 since taking over from Keith Cole was enough for John Brady to get the job on a permanent basis. And Portsmouth have signed Danny Cowley and his brother Nicky on a long-term deal after 6 wins in 12. They did, though, miss out on the playoffs. Danny described it as being one of the greatest privileges of our lives to be associated with this club. Lincoln, Blackpool and Sunderland had already made it. It was Oxford United who pipped Portsmouth and Charlton to get into those playoffs. It's Oxford against Blackpool. So Oxford, 6 wins in 7. They were playoff finalists last year. Against Blackpool, who are also in form, won their last 4 and lost just twice in the last 22. It's kind of the in-form teams in one semi-final be the out-of-form teams in the other. Lincoln have won 4 of their last 8, but only 1 in 10 before that. Up against Sunderland, have only won 1 of their last 9. Having won 9 of an unbeaten 12 before. I mean, I guess your head says Sunderland, but there's a few teams there capable of pulling off a shock, isn't there?
Yeah, Blackpool went on an amazing run, didn't they, earlier in the season, and to see them finish third, you know, they were pushing Peterborough all the way at one point in terms of, well, they were the ones, if anything, because of Sunderland falling away, they were the ones that kind of were keeping the pressure up by keeping on winning and stuff. So, That's going to be a really interesting one between them and Oxford. Oxford obviously are a good footballing side, another team that play really good football and have a philosophy of what the way they want to do things. I'm just really interested in that one. I think Blackpool, if anything, I lean towards Blackpool just because the results I've seen them get this season, when other teams have been in form and have still managed to get some results against them, I think it might be the time for them to start their rise again. In the other one, it's what you pick. You know, Sunderland are the giant, let's say. Lincoln, who under Appy have been fantastic and, you know, were there or thereabouts in the top two for most of the season and find themselves fall short. But for them to be in the playoffs against Sunderland, I'm torn between my head and my heart there. I'd love for Appy to do it, but I think Sunderland will probably just find their form at the right time.
And do you know what? Probably if they'd kept that form up of 9 wins in 12, unbeaten and all the rest of it, sometimes you can run out of steam before the money shot, can't you? So actually, so long as they can regroup, and at least they did manage to stick a win in towards the end of that yeah. sequence of, they had obviously 7 matches without a win, maybe you get going again and you take momentum in and across that. I'll tell you what, I've just thought, Sky Bet League One next season, a resurgent Ipswich Town under Paul Cook, who's having a major clear out down there. Nigel Adkins is definitely going to get Charlton Athletic going. Portsmouth have just done that long-term deal with the Cowley brothers. Who knows, maybe Sunderland in there, maybe not. Sheffield Wednesday will need to regroup. Meanwhile, Rotherham have proved twice before they can bounce straight back. If Gareth Ainsworth is still with Wickham, it's going to be foot to the boards. We'll come to Bolton in a minute, but just got promoted from Sky Bet League 2. And I tell you what, Ian Everett's going to keep his foot to the boards and he isn't going to slow up. That is going to be some contest next season.
Yeah, some massive football clubs, you know, former Premier League clubs. When you look, just looking through the league, it's incredible. Like you say, he's still Wigan are in there. Yeah, Ipswich, Portsmouth, Charlton. And then if Sunderland or Blackpool, either one, obviously, one's going to need to lose, and extra Premier League teams, it's just crazy. And you know, Bolton are a side that are off. I know they're obviously, we're coming on to them later, but they're a side that have found good momentum.
Let's just seamlessly flow from one division to another, because if anybody has missed it, Cambridge had the anxiety of missing out 2 weeks in a row, but they've made it in one of the automatic promotion places. And let's start with Bolton. Ian Everett says the club has rebuilt trust and reconnected with the town. 16 wins in the final 22 matches. Blimey heck.
I spoke to him recently and spoke about the way he wants to play, his philosophy and everything like that. And he backs his philosophy. And, you know, I think it tells from that record, 16 in the last 22, did you say?
I did.
It's amazing because he's playing a style of football that if you said in League Two he'll be playing this football and you'll get them up, people will say no chance. Oh, you want to play this dilly-dally football in League Two, it's not going to happen. But he stuck to his philosophy from the beginning of the season, and then he's seen the fruits of it towards the end. And what he believes is he's got a system and a mentality within his team that you can grow with. So when they go to the next level, they're not having to readjust and say, we're now going to play football. they're ready. They're ready from day one. And it's going to add that little bit of quality. You know, again, Bolton, big club. If they get their fans in and everything like that, with finances, things like that, they could add that little bit of quality. You wouldn't be surprised if they gave it another go next year to say that they'll be up there again, because no way is it easy by any means. But I think if you look at Wickham's meteoric rise of going from League Two to the Championship, you'd say that Bolton are maybe a more fashionable type team in terms of the history and the structure of the club. And I wouldn't back against them doing really well in League One next year.
I'll finish with the playoffs after I'll just tell everybody about the rest of the Skybet League Two news, which is that Port Vale have released veteran post-war record goal scorer Tom Pope, 115 goals in 343 matches over two spells. 6 wins in 16, not enough to get Joby Mackenough the Leighton Orient job on a permanent basis. Leighton Orient have said they're after an experienced League One or Two manager. Good luck to Joby, who has announced his retirement. Bradford City as well have parted company with Mark Sellers and Connor Truman, who have been offered other roles at the club. When they picked the club up in December, they're on goal difference outside the relegation zone. Both of them were academy coaches, won 10 of their first 14, but have taken just a point from their last 21. Not good enough for the club, say, and they want an experienced manager, and it's thought that they already know what they're going to do in that department because they're not seeking applicants. Must just say that we're recording this on the 36th anniversary of the Valley Parade fire, so our thoughts are obviously with the 56 people who never returned from a football match on that sad day. Walsall also have decided that Brian Dutton is not the man to take them forward. He did have the job on an interim basis, 19th in League Two. He's not good enough by any stretch of the imagination, said the Walsall hierarchy. And there has been another managerial change, and it will raise a lot of eyebrows because your playoffs are going to be contested between Newport County and Forest Green Rovers, and Tranmere and Morecambe, who were held off from one of those automatic promotion places. Tranmere Rovers have sacked Keith Hill despite delivering a place in the playoffs and taking them to the EFL Trophy final. In the club's defence, I suppose, they say 2 wins in 11 is not good enough, and they've decided to place their faith for 2 or 3 games that they have left in Ian Dawes, who was caretaker before Keith Hill took over, and club legend Andy Parkinson. What do you think of that one, Curtis?
I think it's bold.
Thank goodness the word that you started, that you finished there was bold. I thought it was going somewhere else when you said BO at the start of it.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, it's a very bold decision. It's you know, it's Mark Palios who is a big character, I guess, shall we say, in football. So he's not scared to make a big decision. It's just, you know, it will only seem like a good decision if they go up. And that's it. You know, he can only win by them getting promoted. And that's the only way that people are going to accept that it was the right decision. I think regardless of how they play, whether they even get to the final, I think, like I say, it's always going to be, oh, we should never have got rid of the manager at the time because, you know, he was the one that got us there.
Yeah, 2 of the 4 playoff contenders under caretaker managers, because Jimmy Ball is in charge of Forest Green Rovers, taking 11 points from a possible 18 after losing the previous 4. I guess it's hard to look beyond Morecambe, isn't it? 5 wins out of 6 going into the playoffs, and
yeah,
with another win might have made it automatically.
That's it. You know, for Morecambe to be up there, when we talk about the budgets and what people have got and stuff like that, Morecambe just, it's amazing because, yeah, that club, it's obviously come a long way in the years in this league, and I think it's just an interesting story that they might have even crept in there at the expense of Bolton, or even at one point it looked like Cambridge potentially might let themselves down. So fair play to them, but it's just about, like I say, for them continuing on that and making sure they finish the job, because no one's going to remember the season where you did really well and lost in the playoffs. So it's just about making sure that they're able to keep themselves going, finish the job, and then it'll be a fantastic season and a massive, massive story for Morecambe.
Love chatting to you as always. Three quick fire questions to finish. How were your legs and any other parts of your body as you came off the pitch after that monumentous 8, 10, 12 minutes, whatever it was?
Yeah, legs fine. Mind frazzled, shall I say. That's what I'll say. My legs were fine. I could last the 10 minutes. That was easy. Mind was frazzled. I've actually, ironically, been back to my rehab on Monday and Tuesday. So I've been brought back down to earth by running around the pitching and definitely making sure, been made sure that I know that I'm not fit yet. By the running that it made me do. So if that's anything to say, I've been doing that the last couple of days.
Well done. My second question is, have you got any more surprises up your sleeve, or is that it?
No, not yet. Not yet at the moment.
Fine.
Yeah, I might change to being a striker or something next year. So
well, I you know, we had a lot of material to get through. Otherwise, I would have picked up on that theme of playing striker. And finally, serious question. Do you know, I mean, have you got any indication about your own future? You are obviously, when's your contract run out? End of June?
Yeah, so my contract's up the end of June. Yeah, there's a lot of conversations to be had. I think behind the scenes with the football club in terms of Derby County, a lot needs to be sorted out. So I think closer to the time that's sorted out, maybe my conversations will happen. But obviously, you know, I'm hungry to play. I know I get the experienced captain mentor tag, but I'm hungry to play. You know, if I am going to be mentoring people and mentoring players, I'm happy to do that, no problem. But I'm there to take their place, and that's it. I'm there. I want to play football. I want to challenge, and I really, even having that 10 minutes, it made me even more hungry to get back out there and get myself back on the football pitch.
Without gloating, Rotherham, Sheffield Wednesday and Wickham fans, he hasn't stopped smiling throughout the entire time we've been recording this. Great to talk to you, Curtis. Thank you very much for joining us, as always.
Thank you very much. Cheers, John.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Let's finish things off this week by talking about Mental Health Awareness Week. It's an annual event when there's an opportunity for all of us across the UK to focus on achieving good mental health. The EFL are marking it with their Mile for Mind campaign that's running between the 10th and 16th of May. It's part of the EFL's On Your Side partnership with mental health charity Mind, which sees EFL clubs open their stadiums to people of all ages and abilities this week to do a mile around the perimeter of the pitch to raise awareness of mental health issues and to donate much-needed funds to support the work that Mind do. One man who's spoken openly over the past few years about his own struggles is Newport County's mental health ambassador, Kevin Ellison. And I tell you what, Kevin, you're into the playoffs, so you've got plenty to look forward to now, but that obviously hasn't always been the case across a big chunk of your 20-year professional career. 20-year professional career, mate!
That's amazing, isn't it? If you'd have told me when I turned 20, 21, first-time professional, that I'm going to have 10 years playing football for a living, I'd have snapped your hands off. And as I say, Eddie, I'm talking to you, and with another 10 years on top of that, so 20 years in, and hopefully it could be the end of a good season for us.
Yeah, I mean, that's the positive side of this, but what I was alluding to was you've had a pretty tough time over, well, the past decade, really, from what I understand.
Yeah, I just think, as a human being, everyone sees us as we're footballers, and we get paid to kick a ball about. We go on these holidays, and you got these cars, and the younger lads now with the wash bags, you know what I mean? I think we get judged, but at the same time, I'm a normal human being. I'm not a robot, and yeah, I have had some dark times in the past, and I'm not ashamed to speak out now, because since I've spoken out a couple of years back, I've helped a number of people, not just in football, but fans from other football clubs as well, which it's brought me together and closer to them. So, yeah, I've had some dark times, and lucky for me, I'm out the other side, a bit better, in a better position. And I just obviously tell my story now, and if I can inspire someone and help somebody, then so be it. Great for me.
Are you out the other side, or do you still have bad days, Kev?
Clem, I think we're like most people. I think I'm never going to be out clear of it. I'm like, as I say, just because I play football doesn't make me immune, but I will have me down days, I think, but so does everybody else in every walk of life, don't they? And I think now I've come out, when I said to you I'm in a better place, I've got better coping mechanisms to deal with those when they do come, where last time I think let them all build up and eat away from me from the inside, and it wasn't a nice place to be.
I mean, the thing I find disconcerting about your story was you did bottle it up for a very long time, did you not? I mean, even the people you were living with didn't realise what was going on inside you.
Yeah, I think for whatever reason, is it because I was in a football environment and I'm meant to be macho, and being me, being 40 now, I grew up in the old school where your dad used to say, come on, man, up and get on with it type of thing. So was that all in my head of, oh, I'm not speaking out because he's going to see me as a weak, and what are these going to think of me? And yeah, I did bottle a lot of it up, and I think it was like 8 or so, 9 years before I eventually spoke out. But I was still living with, obviously, the ex-partner and the kid's mum back then, and I was going to therapy sessions without her even knowing. I'd make excuses, I'm going here or I'm going there, but yeah, I wouldn't tell her for whatever reason back then, in fear of probably getting judged and what will she think. I was going to get see people and see a counsellor and get help, which obviously I was sat on the couch with her prior to that, and she wouldn't know anything else.
Has that changed now? You're much more willing to share with people because you find it helps your own particular process, because I'm guessing that would be a key piece of information you would pass on to others, that once it's out, you don't feel quite so isolated and you do feel you have friends you can turn to just to get stuff off your chest.
Yeah, definitely. I know, obviously, you learn from life experiences, me sat here and talking to you now about, obviously, mental health. If I only knew then what I knew now, by how easy it actually is to speak to your loved ones around you, and how much it, me just speaking out when I did tweet, I just done it because it did release a massive weight off my shoulder. And as I say, here I am today. And through that, I was expecting a backlash, as you do, in fear of judging of, are you this, you that? But the support I got was unbelievable, and I was thrown back by it.
So I always had you down as one of the sort of big, bad pantomime villains of football. You know, you were always the one that everybody wanted to sort of shout at and things. Was that image and what was going on in stark contrast to what was going on inside your head?
Yeah, I think when I look back now and I see some of the stuff that I've done over the last few years, and when I went in a good place, I look at it and I think they were all little triggers that was obviously inside me. Was I really a big, horrible, bald, big-nosed scouser who was going round and nasty? And yeah, I love to get involved and have a bit of banter with the fans, but I think that was my way of masking my own troubles, of me knowing I was near enough broken inside, but yet I wanted to show I was manly on the outside, if you get me.
I mean, you know, one of the great sort of points of mental health issues with sports people as well is when they get towards the end of their careers, they start to think about the future. They've committed all that time, energy, they've been passionate about their sport, and then the dawning reality that that world is coming to an end starts to strike them. Was that a trigger point for you, do you think?
Massively. That was probably the final nail in the coffin for me of going to get help, because as you say, looking at ex-sports players, especially in football, I look at them and I've seen them gone down drinks, drugs and gambling, and I'm thinking, I've got two kids, I don't want to be seen going down that route. So that was a major thing in me going to seek and get help and try and be in a better position, so when it does come around, eventually they are weird, I'm in a better place to cope with it.
Do you think there's a sort of anxiety as you worry about it coming before it's actually upon you? It's not just the reality of where's your income coming from, what structure am I going to have in my life, but it's the thought of it undermining your future sitting on the horizon.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I experienced that again last summer. I think when I was coming out of contract at Morecambe, knowing I wasn't going to get a new contract, and I was applying for jobs, and I spoke to a few clubs regarding playing part-time, but then obviously they weren't going to start till October, and this was in May and that. So I'm looking at it and thinking, well, how am I going to support the kids and pay for the house the next couple of months? So I applied for jobs, and I'll be honest, there was jobs I was applying for, SEN teachers and stuff like that, and I weren't very successful. But is that because I was putting a football CV in when realistically, I needed a normal CV, which I've never had. And first time last summer, I drew a CV up, applied for a few jobs, and then was meant to start one on the Monday. Drove down to Newport because they asked me to go down. And as I say, I pulled over to do an interview on Zoom for another SEN teacher. And then the rest is history, because I ended up signing for Newport, which is quite good. But it was, as I say, it was I had to go and seek a bit of help because like, I felt the anxiety and everything kicking in last summer. Sat there with the kids on the couch and couldn't keep still and breaking down, you know, in tears, like, because I was worried what the future holds.
So have you accepted the fact that at some point when those magnificent 42-year-old legs of yours do finally give up and there are no more football contracts, that you will have to go into everyday life? Is that, and does that help your mental health, knowing what's on the horizon probably quite soon?
Yeah, definitely, because as I say, I played part-time football and worked before I signed professional at Leicester, so I know what the big real world's about, and then it doesn't scare me now. I'm in a better place. And last year, through the PFA, I'd done my kids counselling with children. I qualified level 2 on that because that's something I've got a passion for now. It's since I've spoke out and people speak to me, I've got a bit of a passion for helping others. I know I want to stay in football. I'm doing my coaching badges as we speak, and that would be great if I could stay in football, but it's not that easy. But you've got to find something else in life as well that you've got a passion for, and doing me children's counselling, I think I've got a passion for that, and I'd love to help people in the future.
Listen, it is Mental Health Awareness Week. Let's go big picture first of all. Let's say there's somebody out there with a pretty big problem. They've not been sharing it so far. What would your advice be to them, first of all? What should they go and do?
Go and speak to your loved ones, definitely around you. That was one thing I never did, and it's one thing I regret now, because a couple of years ago, my mum passed away, and I know when she passed away, she was worried still about me, even though I'd spoke out and told her I was okay. But I just wish I would have had that conversation with her. I never, ever got to it, and I knew she wanted that, but she probably felt a bit uncomfortable asking me. So the big message for me is go and speak to your loved ones, because the ones who care about you will be there 100% behind you and back you more than you think.
And once you've got your initial help, counselling, treatment, whatever it is, what are your sort of day-to-day little recommendations in terms of stuff? Well, actually, that we all can do for prevention, you know, yoga, meditation, etc. What kind of stuff have you been doing, would you recommend?
Yeah, Clem, that's definitely one of mine, yoga, meditation. And I was doing a lot of yoga before the lockdown happened, but now I've been doing bits online, and my meditation's still 20 minutes daily. Reading is a big one for me. Till I was on the counselling course last year, it's probably the first time I picked a pen up in 20 years, really, other than an autograph, which is not really good. I'm not proud of that. But
well, and also, Kev, there can't have been too many of those that you signed, no, surely.
Yeah, but that's the big one for me, is that you got to find something to keep yourself busy. And like, I like to go out on a bike now, and I like to go walking with the kids into the Welsh mountains and stuff like that, which is near Liverpool. And then if I'm down in Newport, I'm lucky enough to live in near the hills there, so I get myself out and just keep myself occupied.
There's no huge cost to that, is there? Put on a waterproof jacket, put on an old pair of trainers, make sure you've got a mobile phone with you in case you get lost, and off you go and walk. I mean, it doesn't cost fortunes to do, does it?
Exactly, mate. It's free, isn't it? And you look outside, and especially the way I'm in Newport, I know people was like giving Newport a bit of stick at the time when I joined, but the area and the surroundings there has been unbelievable for me, and I honestly relish walking around there now because it's in the open and it's helping me move forward in life.
So listen, in stark contrast to what was going on in your life at this time last year, in the middle of lockdown, worrying about the future, etc., well, what a crescendo to this season it could be. What are your chances in the playoffs, do you think?
Well, we've got Forest Green. It's a tough game. I think Forest Green are probably the best footballing team in this league if I look at it that way, and it's not going to be an easy one. So there's two ties, home and away, so it's going to be interesting. Hopefully, as you say, hopefully I can end the season on a high. And let's not talk about the P word, but just give it our all and we'll take it from there. You know what these games are like, and anybody can beat anyone, especially in League Two. It's about consistency and who turns up on the night. So we've got two 90 minutes. Hopefully we can get it done in then, and it'll be nice, a trip to Wembley.
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it? Where there are two teams that you could face. One begins with a T and the other one begins with an M. Do you know what the one beginning with an M stands for?
The two previous clubs, isn't it? That could obviously, I can feature there if we do.
Well, one in particular came in my head more strongly than perhaps the other one, with no disrespect to Tranmere Rovers. But, mate, you know, Wembley Stadium, big stage. If you did get that far, behave yourself, will you?
Well, I can't promise you anything, and that's me sat here and spoke to you. If the same situation did pop up, I think it could be a good viewing for the telly.
Mate, good luck with everything. Good luck in the playoffs. Thanks for being so inspiring and sharing your experiences. Obviously, we're sorry to hear that you've struggled over the years, and maybe we didn't realise, but we're glad you found a route through. Great to talk to you, Kevin.
Cheers, Clem. Thanks for having me on.
And if you are struggling with any of the issues we've been discussing with Kevin, then please visit mind.org.uk. That's mind.org.uk, where there's advice and help at hand. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Kevin Ellison and Curtis Davis. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.